Bailey & Harding Ultrasound System is sponsored by Protein Rebel. And this month, the month of October, the spooky month, they are giving us some Run Easy Marine Collagen to give to you, my friends. I've been taking their collagen for quite a while now. It's got some scientific stuff behind it. It is hydrolyzed marine collagen powder, which helps to reduce aches and pains after runs and minimises the risk of injury, strengthens joints, tendons and ligaments, also improves skin, hair and nails. Mixes really easily into coffee, which is what I do, 2 spoons in my coffee, but can be mixed into any drink or porridge or anything like that, and can also be added to foods like yoghurt. I take 10 grams daily, which is 2 teaspoons in the morning and 2 teaspoons in the evening, and you start to feel the benefit after 2 weeks. I have got nice hair and I've got nice nails, but also it really does help my running, and it's not wanky and it's not really expensive. So the October giveaway is 2 large tins of Run Easy Marine Collagen, 200 servings. That retails at £112, which is incredible. If you would like to win this, just go to the link in our bio or Instagram, which is Ultrasound System Pod, click enter. Enter away, and we will announce the winner at the end of October. Just to remind you, this podcast is for grown-ups, not children. It has got some swear words in it and some very immature adult themes. But if you're on the school run, I'd advise you to fucking well switch it off now. On with the pod! Welcome to the Bailey and Harding slash King sound system. This is a Legends episode featuring Chris King, who has given me his bio that I'm going to read to you. And he's going to awkwardly sit there while I read it to you. Okay? For 2 decades, Chris has been an industry-leading mind in this grueling sport. Having run ultramarathons, coached others to complete them, and designed some of the toughest races in the world. Chris is the owner and director of Beyond the Ultimates, a company that organises multi-day ultramarathons in some of the world's most breathtaking locations. He's been featured in numerous publications and has shared his expertise at conferences and events around the world. Did you write that?
No, I feel I don't know if you can see me, but I squirmed so far down in my chair. There was an obvious one that I had written and submitted. And you know, you could have read that one, but stop.
No, but I like this one.
No, oh.
Here's a different one. This is a pickle one. Pickle wrote this one. Chris is part of the ownership team at Beyond the Ultimate and the Spine Race. He's a passionate dad, a try-hard runner, and believes adventure can be a force for good in the world. That's what I want to talk to you about. He's currently training for the FKT of the Southwest Coast Path. Big announcing that. A record that is far beyond his current ability. Not so big.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay.
That bio is more honest, and that one makes me feel a lot more comfortable than the first one.
Because I was worried that you wouldn't submit a bio, I ChatGPT'd it. And then I was like, I hate that. I hate the AI thing. Except when I did it, I just wrote, write me a bio for Chris King. It was quite good.
Did it come up with an ice hockey player? There's an ice hockey
player called Chris King. It's really good. It starts with, Chris King is an accomplished entrepreneur, best known for founding and owning Beyond the Ultimate, a company that specializes in organizing unique and challenging adventure races.
Right, I'm just going to sack Jenny, our PR team now. Don't need
it. Sack that off. Anyway, how are you?
Sauce Jenny.
Where are you? What are you doing today? And how are you? The 3 most important questions.
I'm in my flat in Bournemouth. I am fine. I'm good. I'm a little tired because I've been travelling around. I've been at weddings and things. It's been wedding season for my friends, so I'm a little wedding fatigued. And then I'm going to be leading a little social run today around here. I've kind of put some time into a little social club, and it's the first midday run. So after this, I'm going to go take some people out that are relatively new to running and try and get them into trails and stuff.
Do you see those people as potential clients? Is this like a sales thing? That's what I'm saying.
No, I mean, no. I would definitely hang around with different people. I'd be hanging out with like more unhinged people, I think, if I wanted to be recruiting from a pool to do my races. I think for this, these are sane 5K runners.
You're fluffing. You get them while they're like naive and on park run, and next thing you know, it's a half
Come
hour
with
thing.
Me.
Yeah, exactly. On the South Downs Way 100. Centurion race, there is a part of it that goes to Queen Elizabeth Country Park, and on the same day there's always a half marathon, so the 100 runners are running through, the half marathon runners are coming through, and I just always think, just guys, don't, this is a gateway drug, like the half marathon is a gateway drug. Which leads me nicely, like I'm a professional presenter, onto how you're quite young, aren't you? You're in your 30s.
I'm 37, thank you.
That's quite young. So how have you managed to get into this ridiculous industry? Because for most people, being involved with like anything outdoors is the dream, right? But you own your, well, you're part owner, I don't know, you have to go into that, of one of the most exciting adventure companies in Europe. So how has that happened? Like, where did that come from? Have you always wanted to do it? Give us a bit of
No,
background, Chris.
I think if I think anyone would want to do it, given, if you wrote that job down on paper, if you presented that to, me as a 15-year-old kid going into a work experience thing, then I would have been like, yeah, I'll have that. But I just fell into it. Like I was running about, and I was really liking, I think running was the vessel, but I actually liked the adventure more. It could have quite easily been cycling. It could have quite easily been. I think I fell into running more because I heard of this lady that used to run near me called Nikki Spinks.
Oh yeah,
I don't know if you've
Spinksy.
heard of her. Yeah, good old Spinksy. So I've never actually met Nikki Spinks face to face, but we was at the same running club for a while. And I kept hearing the name of this Nikki Spinks and this Bob Graham round thing. Bob Graham actually wasn't a thing then. It was just she was very good. There's this very good runner up in the Fells and things, and I just liked that stuff. And I think because I lived in the Peaks and the Pennines at the time, I fell into running just by proxy of being there. Like if I was in the Lake District, I probably would have fallen into running because it's very big there as well. So yeah, and then Beyond the Ultimate was just an opportunity. I went into a running shop one day, and I actually didn't AI got it slightly wrong. I wasn't the founder of Beyond the Ultimate. There was a chap called Wes
See,
and
and
a
that's
chap
why
called
AI
John.
will never win.
Never get it right.
The details.
Who had the idea and the concept of a multi-day in each environment, and they kind of did a concept race and then had a little bit of a bust up and fell out. And Wes said, "It's not for me. I'm not into this now." And he was the kind of mind for the running, and John wasn't. He was the business, so he was looking for someone to kind of take over and kind of lead it for him. And he just didn't. He was just petrified he was going to lose all his money. And I said, yeah, all right. I was the gym owner at the time and thought, yeah, that sounds great. And I think because I was young, I was just probably more arrogant and naive rather than confident and having ability.
So
So
how old
I
were you at
think
this point?
20, God, it was 2015. So I would have been mid to late 20s. Yeah, 25, 26.
What had you been doing? Had you been just owning the gym before that, working the gym
Yeah,
before
I
that?
didn't organize anything. I didn't organize anything. I think I'd volunteered for one park run.
Oh, that's good. That's good to
Yeah,
have on
I
your
was fine.
CV.
I had no right to get it, but I think actually that naivety and knowing nothing, I suppose my personality trait is to become quite obsessive. So within 12 months, I did not leave the house and was learning by proxy of everyone and anyone that I could get next to because I wanted it to work. I saw this as a bit of a golden egg. Yeah, so then I just spent the next years and years and years obsessively learning about everything and anything to do with it, and then spent hours in the environments and picked it up and learned from locals and all that kind of stuff. And I think you don't just learn a job like that in a book. You've got to go and do it. And yeah, I've been fortunate enough to be doing it now for a long time. Long time.
So tell me about the races that you're organising at the moment and like how they came about, how the ideas to them came about.
So my hat that I put on most days is for Beyond the Ultimate. So we do the multi-day stuff, and I essentially just design races that I'd like to do. So they're very adventure-led rather than ultra-marathon-led. And the whole ethos of Beyond the Ultimate is that they're just testing you in really extreme environments. So we go to really remote places, and then I've always thought there's like an ethical reason. There's ethical ways to do this. So we shape the company around what I thought would be the best for the locals where we go, because they're often UNESCO heritage sites, so you have to behave in a certain way. And then, yeah, it just seemed, thankfully, people, liked the races that we were putting together. So, and now I get a lot of the credit, but actually, there's an amazing team at Beyond the Ultimate, and it takes a massive team effort to get these things off the ground. So, yeah, Simon and Archie, who are like my business partners, have been fundamental for the new races that have come up, and we've got a hard-working team all the time. So,
Give me a little menu of what you've got. Like, what have you got on your menu of races? Races? Is that the
the
right
group,
word? Do we use the word
yeah, I'd say
races?
so. Yeah, we'll do it. So, the Global Race Series is the environment-led one. So, you've got ice in Sweden, jungle in Peru, mountain in Kyrgyzstan, and desert in Namibia. So, they're all 5 days, 230 to 250K self-sufficient races. We've got a little mini version, which is in Scotland, a 3-day, but we rather than making it easy, we've tried to cram 5 days into three. So it's actually a quite a tough 3 day adventure. And then we've got the Ferrangers Ultra, which is a non-profit race, which I think is one of the most unique events on the planet. And then that's it for now. We've got one more in the pipeline that's kind of a bit different than those as well. And then obviously we joined with the Spine Race in 2020. So then there's that little race that
Oh
takes
yeah,
up a lot of our team's time.
we'll talk about that later. Fucking spine race. So, tell me about like with these races, when you said I wanted to organise events that I would want to do, have you done all of them? I think that's quite an interesting question for someone that organises these races. Have you actually done them?
Yeah, so I ran the desert in 2019 when we were training up a new RD. So Adam Kimball, good mate of mine who RDs that race now, I thought it would be cool for his first one for me to just be there in case he needs me. The jungle, I've spent so much time in that area trying to find routes. I've not ran the race in its proper format, but I've done all the route on foot and more. The mountain ultra, when we recce'd that, we went and recce'd it over 7 days rather than five, and all that kind of stuff. So I've not. The desert's the only one that I've done in the correct format as a race, but the others I've kind of been on foot and had to go about to learn it. So I've not really done all of my races as they would. Maybe I will on the level when we've got more routine. I just didn't really enjoy my own race.
I mean,
I
I
didn't
think
like it.
it takes some of the magic away from it when you're worrying about medical provision, insurance, and whether or not it's going to be too dangerous for people to do, right? Like it does take away a bit of the joy.
It's a bit of a busman's holiday when you know every inch of the course and stuff. I definitely wouldn't have designed the desert in that way if I knew I was going to run it that one day, because it's bloody tough, that event. So I actually like to do races where I can kind of just be a nobody and just kind of just try and switch off as much as possible. I'm not a massive racer myself, to be honest. Because I'm more of an adventurer. Like signing up to loads of ultras isn't normally my thing. I'd rather just go out on my own, and that's what this whole social club thing's about. It's me trying to force myself to be a social runner. I'm normally quite like, no, I don't want a training partner, thanks. I'm going to go out on my own. So I'm trying to learn how to be social when running.
How did you learn how to do the like recce stuff? Like how like having done stuff like that before, but I've always been part of a team, so I've always just been like, get her out there, she'll do the running. I don't have to plan routes, I don't have to like know anything about how to read a map, I don't have to know anything about mountain safety because I've always got someone there to look after me. But with you, was it a case of I'm going to learn everything about it, or did you go out and learn from other people?
Yeah, well, I was fit enough. Like, while all of that was going on, I was doing my own, essentially, like going out at the weekends and running 30, 40 miles with a tent. And so I was fit enough to do them. That wasn't something, and I was obviously in the fitness industry, so I didn't have to learn that bit. But yeah, learning, I think it was more environment led than purpose led. So rather than like going to do a mountain leader course, I went to that very specific jungle and sat with the locals for so long that you absorb everything by proxy. And then I came back and almost, now my life, I'm hanging around with mountain leaders, doctors, trauma surgeons, local wildlife experts. So you just get it. You absorb it by osmosis, I think. And then, yeah, it was just a case of learning. I had a chap called Andy, who's one of the Beyond the Ultimate team, who is very good at risk assessing and doing all that stuff. So I had a guy there for that in the early days, which was a massive help. It stopped me. Stop me being as scared as I probably should have been.
It's not fear for yourself, is it? It's fear for everybody else. That's the big problem.
Yeah, and that doesn't go away. That doesn't go away. Like, I'm still worried about that. And the day I stop worrying about other people on my race is the day that I quit my job.
How many people are you taking on each of these events?
Anywhere between 40 and 100. So
Fucking hell.
most are like 40. But like if some of the operate more, we have more staff than runners most of the time. So in the jungle, we have 70 people operate the race for 40. Well, it's now 70 for 70. The Ferrangers race that we just did had a capacity of 100, and the staff was 632.
Are you
So
joking?
it's become this huge operation to just make this experience for a few people. So yeah, they've become different beasts, really.
And how, like, what I'm really interested in is that, so I think, I remember the Green Runners. I'm one of their like big green runnery type people. And one of the things I worry the most about is the impact on the environment of like us traveling to do this stuff. So there's two sides to this. First off is live your fucking life. Like, go. I'm always saying to people, don't wait, go and do it now. We had someone on the podcast the other day that was like, I want to do Cape Wrath in 7 years, and I'm like, no, we have to do Cape Wrath now, or like in 2 years, because you might be dead in 7 years. And you know, the fact that ultra running or even like this expedition stuff is game changing, because even if it doesn't change your life getting to that goal, the process of going through it makes you into a different person, right? And you learn more in those 4 or 5 days, and I think you can learn in fucking years sat at home on your ass watching films or reading books. But there's an environmental impact, and there's also an impact on those people living in those places that are really fucking far flung. How are you balancing that? Because it seems like this is why I want to talk to you, because it seems like you do that really well, and it seems to be front and center of everything that Beyond the Ultimate do, which makes me gravitate towards them over other race companies.
Yeah, I think, I mean, firstly, going back to your boy that wants to do the Cape Wrath in 7 years, I found out something or came across something recently that changed my whole view. I mean, I was always impulsive anyway, but I found out that, well, guess how long the average pension is drawn for? So when people retire and they draw their pension, how many years are they drawing their pension out on average?
Mine's probably going to last me about 3 or 4 days. So I
Yeah.
guess a year?
8 years. Right. So people work really
Right.
hard, save their pension up, and they only get 8 years at it. And then it kind of like, you know, they pop it or they get. And I just thought, shit, like people go like they think they've got all this time, like you should go. And that was an amazing stat for me. So your boy, if you're listening, Cape
It's
Wrath man
actually a
or girl.
woman. Her name's Helen.
Oh, okay.
We've
Helen,
been doing lots of
get it.
Heleneing.
Get it. Helen, get it fucking sorted. Go get it done. But then when it comes to travel, you're absolutely right. You know, you can't. I feel like a lot of companies would try and greenwash themselves out of this. You know, like we accept that you're taking a bunch of people and you're flying from a location to a location, it's got a cost. And we do a bit of offsetting, not ideal, but we do our bit of offsetting. We've got a woodland up in Knoydart with the Forest Trust there, and we don't do like for like tree planting. We actually listen to them and do border fencing, pay their tree planters, and whatever they say will be the most impactful, we do. But the way we look at it is, if you are going to take a flight, let's make it impactful, so much so that when they get back home, they change their life in their day-to-day, which has far more of a longer standing effect on carbon than whatever. So if, for example, you sign up for our jungle race, you're going to fly to Peru, there's going to be a carbon cost of that. But we haven't flown hard. We've only flown out about 50 members of staff. All the rest of the 50 are local. So we're limiting on our size as much as possible. But you're going to the coal face of the people that are impacted. So this year we had the Wakaria tribe, who are kind of 1 foot in, 1 foot out of the jungle, come and tell a story about how all their water is drying up, and how they're now praying to the gods, the Icaros, to do this. And then we have people come from the Conservation Association to talk about like illegal logging in the area and all that kind of stuff. And the impact of that on the person, and let's face it, our races are a bit spenny. You're probably going to be quite impactful when you come back home. You might be a CEO of a company. You might have saved up for 3 or 4 years. You're going to come back home and you're going to go, you know what? That really, really affected me. I might not drive as much. I might not eat meat. Whatever your impact will be. So we take that approach, and it's a bit of an encompassing approach, we know, and it's a bit wishy-washy, but I think it's better than saying, you know, we can cover our carbon, because tree planting isn't the best to cover carbon.
No.
You know, it's better not to fly at all if you're that way inclined. But if you can impact someone's life for the next 5, 6, 10, 15, 20 years, and that flight means something, I think that's our view. Don't do a little rubbish flight to a little rubbish location. And if you're, and actually there's a benefit in all of this, that those remote areas do not have a lot of ecotourism. So we worked out the other day that we've put just under $1 million of income into that area of Peru. That has
Whoa.
fundamentally changed the, oh, since we've been there, fundamentally changed the infrastructure of some of those places. It's got bridges and zip lines and things that they didn't have before. The school buildings have gone up. All that kind of stuff. Our Rangers race has just raised $750,000. So your flight is impacting ranger and wildlife welfare. So as long as that flight means something, I think, yes, not ideal. And we're just hoping that technology will catch up. Capitalism will do its best. Technology will catch up to make it to make it better in the long run. But yeah, so we just kind of know our place in the world, but also think that we've got an ethical or a moral duty to make sure that we can do our best for, environment. And I think going out to these extreme places and meeting the people that are really, really feeling our Sami tribe up in northern Sweden, and their reindeers dying en masse because of the freeze and unfreeze. It's a really powerful thing to that. It makes it real when you meet those people, rather than being someone that's, really far away in a far from place. You've met them, you
Yeah.
know who they are, and actually you're more likely to change the way of life. That was a bit of a ramble, I'm
No,
sorry,
it
but
wasn't. And
I'm quite passionate about
I think
it.
you actually verbalize it very well, because there is that, there's a lot of people, there's the what if or the what aboutery that is like, well, Greta Thunberg flew to that conference. And that thing of actually having somebody who's like, I've seen this now and I'm going to come back and I'm going to make some changes, especially if they are the CEO of a company and they're like, do you know what? We're actually not going to print anything ever again. No printing allowed in the office. We're not going to fucking have paper in here. Even to that point, that does start to make big changes. And I think, there's a fine line between living your life and like trying yourself to change the whole fucking, way that the environment's going, because it's not going to be one person, it's going to be like everybody, isn't it? One of the things that when I was working with the other events company, we went out to the jungle, and it's so delicate, isn't it? Because sometimes you meet people in those places that have never seen a fucking white person ever, and you're like, okay, I'm going to bring 40 people to come through here. How do you manage your actual environmental impact on the ground during those races? Because obviously taking 40 to 80 people to traipse through a jungle is going to have a fucking impact. How is that managed, and how is that kind of received? Do you ever come up against people on the ground who are like, we don't fucking want you here?
It happens very rarely because we've done things slowly. So, our jungle race in the beginning had about 15 people on it, and it's gone from 15 to 70 in 10 years. And every time we flex up a position, we give as much as we take. So let us have another 10, and this is what we'll do to facilitate those 10 people. We'll extend this little area out, and we'll build a little toilet here for your little farmland. We'll open this trail so you can have, if any tourists do come to the area, they can go on a jungle walk, and we'll keep
If
it
any
open.
tourists come,
Yeah, we're like,
nope.
that's they are starting to now, which is exactly what we wanted. The Manu National Park is a bit of a Peru is so good in terms of where you can go. The Manu is a bit where if you're a bird watcher, you go because it's got the most. But now actually, people are starting to go, and these little areas are popping up. The little B&B, because our team need to sleep and eat. The B&Bs are getting bigger. There's stories being
I
added to
can't think of
buildings and stuff. So,
anywhere I would rather not go on holiday
yeah, I
than the
mean, the jungle
jungle.
is tough, right? It's
No,
not
thanks.
a race,
No.
but each race has its own little growth pattern. And actually, the jungle now, we're in our 10th or 11th edition, and I'm going back there purely to get everyone together to say, right, we've spent in these areas and built this infrastructure, but now what do you need? Right, what do you need next? What's the next phase? And then what happens then is almost like a tender process. We do have an agreement with all the locals. It's not a hands out operation. It's you work with us, you provide an experience, a labor force or whatever, and we'll pay you well, and we'll give in return. It's not a charity, it's a business, but we are going to make sure that you come with us. So what with that attitude, we bring people with us rather than make enemies. And then you've got the other things. You just have to behave well, make sure you leave no mark. We have sweeper teams, and all these things are expensive, but it's the right thing to do. And so that's why we go with that attitude of, we don't really hide behind our prices. We are at the top end. I think we're competitive actually compared to some of our competitors, but we are at the top end because we do things the right way, and that's it. So yeah, and it's been tough. It's not always been, I say, and culturally, you've probably traveled to a few places. Culturally, different people work in different ways. Our Sami guys are very direct. They'll tell you how they feel instantly. Instantly and very direct. Where in Peru, everyone gets a turn at talking, and meetings last for 7 hours, but everyone gets a say.
Exactly. Yeah.
So
Peru time.
you have to merge into the culture you're in, and that takes time. The Kyrgyz people that we work with are very different to that, and the Namibs are very different to that. So yeah, it's an interesting job, but I think it allows me to be a people person and manage different types of people, which I
What,
love.
how do you manage dickheads on your races?
Don't have them.
Do you not have any? You must have had a couple.
You're only a dickhead once.
Have you never had anyone on one of your races? Because the thing is, when you're in those expedition races and you're like away from home, if somebody is a tit, it's very fucking obvious, right?
Yeah, I think So in a staffing position, there's a lot of people obviously that want to work with us. Not to sound braggy, but it's just a cool job to have, even for volunteers. So we vet a lot of people before they come out to us. So if you want to be on the ultimate race, you've been vetted by a fair few amount of people, and you've probably been on a softer version of our races and to see if we like you. In terms of the runners, I think actually because they're turning up in an environment that they have respect for, they're even the most dickhead of people are pretty humble.
Do you
And
not get those
actually,
like SAS brutal fucking corporate
we
blokes?
do. Yeah, we get like really big, we get banker wankers, and we also get, you know, that. But they, I think you create a culture and you create an environment, don't you? And we set the tone of that very, very early. And I think there has, I can't think of a time, I can think of one person in my very first race that was a bit wanky. The rest have all been nice people. And, you know, you get to see the best and worst of people in these things, right? So you get to see them pretty stripped down and exposed. And actually, I cannot think of a time outside of that one person who was a bit of a tit that I've ever thought that's a person I wouldn't hang out with back home. But
Wow, that's
I'm seeing like a,
pretty good.
yeah, but I'm also seeing a different version of them, right? I'm not seeing them. I bet if a lot of those wanker bankers I went for a drink with in their, you know, thing in their home, in their little environment with their mates, it'd probably be a different thing. But people are often going there on their own or in twos or threes. They're all strangers. They're all meeting new friends. And actually, we try and everyone's equal.
It's really
So,
interesting. I remember, getting to some of these places with these people from all walks of life, and we had everybody from students spending their last tiny bit of money to like banker wankers, and watching these people at the top end of the sort of apex predator, because that's what they're used to being at the alpha male at and even the alpha female at work, be stripped down to have this vulnerability, which they kind of let the vulnerability come out because they had no option, and then they realized that when they were vulnerable, it was okay. And I think that's the thing about these expedition races that is the most incredible thing, because you are in an environment where you are forced into vulnerability, because the jungle won't take no fucking prisoners, will it? It will literally rip you
no,
down to nothing.
no, yeah.
And then you have to ask for help, or you have to rely on people for help. And I think people come out of it and they're like, do you know what? It was actually all right when I did that, because everybody accepts it. So I think that's one of the most important things about it. But I'm really impressed that you've managed to avoid the having someone terrible within a small group, because having someone terrible within a small group is a fucking management problem. Do you feel like that's because of the kind of ethos that you've built around Beyond the Ultimate? And people are, that's the minute they get on the website, they understand what's going on.
I think so. We have a lot of dialogue with our runners before we turn up with them. There's a lot of community before and after. You know, there's WhatsApp groups and stuff from the races that stay live 2, 3 years after, you know. So, and I think there's actually a chap who did our last race. I don't know if you know him, Andy Delderfield. He does a lot in the alcohol-free space.
Don't know.
He's a really nice chap. I'm going to introduce you to. But he came up to me. He was like, the thing I love about these is that everyone's here for a reason. And by the end of the week, you've probably found it. And it's actually, everyone's quite similar. It's been, they've either been through something they want to get over, or they haven't been through something in a while and want to put themselves through something. So there's a lot of, everyone's there for a reason. And I think there's just a general understanding amongst the camp that we're here. We might be a little bit fringe compared to the rest of society. None of our mates get it back home, but everyone around this fire right now does. Every, you know, I've got a bit of a community here. So, yeah, I think it just does that. And I think actually the culture is set by the team. Our team that we employ are skilled at what they do, but they're also incredibly good socially. Like even young Cammy that we've brought on, Dean, who you've probably met through the spine. We've got Lisa, who's just started. They're all incredibly good socially at reading people, likable. And if you're working with someone for an 18-hour shift in a -40 tundra, you don't want them to be a knobhead.
Exactly.
Simple as
That's
that.
the bit that people don't see, because they think, oh yeah, going and doing that must be amazing. You're having a great holiday and you're doing all this, but actually it's really fucking hard work, and you don't get to go to sleep, and you're cold and wet and tired. Oh, and then you've got to be nice to people, so that's good.
Yeah, there's a bit of a social battery that's needed for sure, but yeah.
What's the most bizarre thing that's happened to you on event? What's the most bizarre thing you've been asked to do on event?
Oh, that's a very good question. Bizarre thing. There's been a lot of like what moments for sure. I think there's been a lot of like, what am I doing here? I think running with a baby rhino, going taking a rhino for a baby run, like a, sorry, I get my words out,
Just
a baby rhino for a run. Yeah.
don't
So
even. That is the don't.
I got out of a car We were recceing part of the route, and I met the ranger, James, who I'm really good friends with now. James is such a nice guy. And James just said, "I need to take the rhino for a walk." And I was like, "Okay, where is the rhino?" And then, like a little Labrador puppy, this rhino comes bumbling along. So it like bumps into me, nearly takes me off my feet. And he goes, do you want to come for a little run with us?" And Ryan, the guy with who was filming, didn't have the camera ready because he wasn't expecting it. And he was like, "If you're going to do that, I might film."
Yeah, it might be a good
And I was
idea.
like, "Yeah, why not?" So then there we are. We do a little 3 to 5K with this little baby rhino around this little conservancy and bring it back and tuck it into its little thing. All right. That was definitely a moment in my life. There's been a few of them.
Oh my God, I
A
love
few of
it.
them.
I want to go for a run with a baby rhino. We're going to talk about Rhino Boy Chris in a minute.
Oh, what a legend.
There's I like those incidents when you're in a really weird place and someone asks you to do something really weird and you're like, I once had to glue someone's gaiters back onto their, they'd ripped their gaiters. We're in the desert, they'd got on a bike with their gaiters on their shoes, ripped it on the chain, and they were like, "Can you fix this?" I'm like, "They don't got any super glue." And I somehow managed to find some super glue in the middle of the desert and sat
Yes.
there trying, but it was boiling, so you couldn't make it fucking, I ended up just taping bin bags to his feet. It was horrible.
I had to save a chap from getting a frostbitten hand by putting his hand in my genitalia space.
Are you right?
That
And
was
was
a.
it in your gen? Is this what you told the police?
Your Honour.
Yeah.
But no, that was a thing. His fingers were frostbitten, and he was getting cold and hypothermic, and we was rescuing him. And I just needed a little bit of dexterity in his hands. And I put them in my armpits for him. And there was this, I mean, you've got to imagine the wind's blowing, it's -40. We're looking in each other's eyes, me and this guy that I've known for 2 days.
So romantic.
He's got his hand in my armpits. We're looking deeply into each other's eyes. I went, "Don't think it's warm enough. Forgive me."
Forgive me.
Forgive me. And yeah, we had a awkward, it was probably a minute, but felt like 5 hours of it probably felt longer for him, I can imagine, than it
Couldn't
did
he
for
put them in
me.
his
And
own crutch? What was wrong with his own crutch?
his decision making was pretty weak by this point. He was a bit gelatinous in his movement because he was getting very hypothermic very quickly. So yeah, we had our moment on the hill, and then I kind of said, we need to get out of it, and we slung him on a snow bike and tore him down this hill. He's all right now. He's got his fingers, and we don't really talk about it
Have you
unless
never
I'm on
spoken about
a
it?
public podcast. We had a beer a couple of months ago, and it didn't come up. I think both prefer it to be that way.
Oh, right. It didn't. That sounds quite sad. Like you split up. Yeah, it's not working out. I'm
So
really sorry about that. Wow. That's very interesting. I do like a good rescue story. I do like a good rescue story.
and a good few of them. Yeah,
Oh,
good few of
good.
them.
Let's talk about the spine. Let's talk about the spine. Talking about
Okay.
taking. Actually, no. Before we talk about the spine, let's just talk about Rhino Boy Chris. So
Okay.
I've known Chris Green. Chris Green, everybody, for people that don't know, is probably the nicest man in the world. Official trademark. He is a man that raises money for Save the Rhino by going and doing runs dressed as a rhino. But not only does he go and do marathons and stuff dressed as a rhino, he is a really fucking handy runner and a super nice guy and an amazing dancer. And he's got the best, probably the best calves on any man I've ever seen. And he's run marathons in this suit. He has. He's run marathons in this suit around prisons. He's done trail marathons. He's done trail ultras. He is. The last time I actually saw him, I think it was on the Arc of Attrition. He wasn't in the rhino suit, but he was carrying a backpack that looked like it should have a child's lunchbox in it. Like, he's not all the gear. He's just like fucking nice. He genuinely loves running and he. Like loves rhinos more than anybody I think I've ever met in my life. It's kind of almost weird how much he loves rhinos, right? And the next thing I know, I'm with flicking through the gram, and you've got him on the Four Rangers event, and he was having the time of his life. So how did that happen? Because I was just like, fucking hell, if anybody deserves to have this sort of access to rhinos, it's Chris.
So I knew Chris in two pathways. I knew him from Save the Rhino, so they spoke about him a lot as their ambassador. I knew him through a mutual friend called Harry Strutt. Harry is a mate of mine that I worked with him for years, and they became good mates. And Harry said to me, "He's probably the nicest man I've ever met. Like, he's sound." And to come, Harry is someone that, he gets on with a lot of people, but for him to just beeline and be, drawn to Chris, it kind of told me a little bit about him before I met him. So then with Save the Rhino, we have a general policy with the Rangers Ultra that no matter who you are, you pay. So even Kathy Dean, CEO of Save the Rhino, the legend MBE, probably the most wonderful, powerfully gifted woman I know, has paid to do that race. Like that's the general rule. It's not for profit. Everyone chips in. But we just kind of sat as a team and Save the Rhino said, look, we should do something for Chris. And he's raised so much money for us and he'll cover his fee in funds and da, 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 da. I was like, yeah, I'm in. I've heard a bit about him through Harry. Bring him out a few days earlier and I will, make sure that we give him a little show round and he can come stay with us a day before the race. And then we got ahead of schedule on the race and I met him. And from one coffee and a 2 hour drive with him, I was like, I'm gonna, this
Marry
guy,
him. I'm gonna marry
this guy's gonna get it. He's gonna get the full Chris King best experience as we can. So I kind of locked myself in a room for half an hour to an hour and just kind of rang in every contact that I could, like Edward, who we'd met, the head ranger at Lewa, and got like a little safari kind of planned out for him. But I think, like I said to Chris, good things happen to good people, and it wasn't that he would never in a million years have asked for any of that.
No.
He had no expectation for it, but actually, it was a little bit of you deserve this. He'd been through some tough personal stuff as well in his life and never said that to anyone. Like anyone else wouldn't have done half the stuff he's done with what's going on. So he deserved it. But actually, he just, as soon as you give him something, he gives back more. So I knew by doing that and kind of pushing him out there, the Rangers would love it too, which they did. And he got all the Rangers in the suit. And then the runners would love it because he was just off his tits, basically.
He was
And
off his
so
tits on joy.
he was just off his tits on Rhino joy. And it just kind of transcended into this massively, powerful experience for everyone just because he was there. So yeah, he is the world needs more Chris Greens for sure.
He's
And so
genuinely like, he's just, you fucking cut him open and he just bleeds kindness. It's unbelievable. Like, if you ever get the chance to meet Chris Green, people, in fact, I'm going to get him on this podcast to talk about stuff he's
You
done
should do.
because
And
he's
you know what?
incredible.
The thing with that is some people, and I'll be honest, I'm a bit of a grump at times. Some people like that are annoying. Like they're that kind and optimistic and like cuddly and lovely that you just think, I don't need you in my life right now. I just need 20 minutes where I can be a grumpy asshole. You just don't have that with Chris. He's just
No.
like, I can't imagine anyone ever going, that Chris Green guy. Nah, I don't really like
No,
him. I just can't imagine it. So yeah. If you ever get a chance to meet him or you see him at a race in the Rhino suit, pull him aside, get to know him. He's a lovely chap.
he's incredible. So let's talk about, so before we go off the international stuff, have you got anything exciting that you want to tell us about, or is it all secret?
Oh, have I got anything?
I don't know. Is it all secret? Have you got anything exciting in the pipeline, or are you going to keep it a secret? I don't know if you've got anything. I'm asking you.
Race wise, not really. No, I haven't got anything
Is there
yet.
anywhere that you would like to go that you haven't gone yet that you're like, this would be
Alaska.
a Alaska? Right. Why is Alaska a problem? Not a problem. Why is it a challenge? What is the challenge of Alaska? Apart from the fact it's quite far away and cold.
I was looking at mountain races, and that was a potential place. And I just wanted a race where animals weren't going to eat my runners, and Alaska had that problem. So
Oh,
Kyrgyzstan.
so is Alaska, have they got polar bears in Alaska?
No, but they got a lot of grizzly and browns.
Oh God. I just listened to a podcast. Guys, listen to this podcast. It's called Real Survival Stories, about a guy. There was a guy on it who was mauled by a brown bear and it took his whole face off. He survived.
Wow. Yeah, it's quite hard to live without a face, I imagine. But the yeah, so what I've concluded is that I always wanted to go to Kyrgyzstan and the Tien Shan anyway, so I put the race there.
There's
And
bears
actually
there, though, isn't
Alaska,
there? Is there bears there?
yeah, but not as many, controllable amount of bears. And Alaska is going to be a place that I go to without going to work. So I will go to Alaska and go on like a little kayaky, runny, climby adventure there myself. So yeah, that's in the pipeline.
And if I was coming to you and saying I want to go on a, I've never been on a multi-day expedition adventure, which one of yours would you say was the best one to go on for somebody that has never done it before?
Depends. If you want an adventure, jungle. If you want like an expedition, ice. If you want a race, desert. And if you want to just see some really fucking beautiful places that no one's ever been to, the mountains.
All of them then. Do you get a season ticket pass?
You can do. Yeah.
Half a
Yeah,
million
you can
pounds
do.
you can have a season ticket.
It's not that bad.
Well, no, it's not that bad. One of the things that I find interesting is how people put is the value that people put into money when it comes to this stuff. So they're like, it's too expensive, or coaching, or this, or whatever it is, that's too expensive. And I'm like, but it's your life. Like, what else are you going to spend that fucking money on? Because I think until you've done one of these things, and I've done a lot of these things, and I've taken a lot of people to do these things, it literally changes your life to the point where you come back and you're not a different person, but you are a more, I think, helpful, productive, and
Grown.
curious
You go to
person. Yeah.
you can't not go through some growth,
And I
no matter
don't
how
think you
much
can buy, you
you
can't buy that any other way. I don't think you can buy it any
know.
other way. So I think anyone who's sitting on the fence going, I'd love to do that, but think about what else you're going to spend that fucking money on. Maybe how many beers you have a week, or how many fucking takeaways you have a week, or like how much you spend every month on your fucking phone or on your
I think,
internet.
yeah, it's interesting because I think the younger generation, we're seeing it now, are more open to spending on experiences and not things. We're seeing more young people come through that are, they haven't got this disposable. Like most people, general pattern is you work your bollocks off 20 and 30s, you have your disposable income by 40, you're trying to spend it in your 50s, your kids take it from you, or grandkids when you're 60 onwards, or depend, that's the general pattern of life. So we don't see that many 20-year-olds because of they're still grafting, they're still growing their careers. But actually, we are now. We're seeing young Harry, who has done jungle and mountain so far this year. He's 24. He'll be our youngest series finisher and in the quickest time. And he is literally, he's working to come on this thing. Like he's doing that. And I think because he sees the value in what that brings him. And actually, what he's looked at is like, when I go for a job interview when I'm 25 and I can say that I've done this. There ain't gonna be other 25-year-olds that have done
No,
that.
there isn't.
So people I think are starting to look at it as not only an investment in their own growth, but just an actual investment. It can bring you a conversation to a different tier level of job. And so yeah, it is different. But you can it's strange, isn't it? I always used to say this on a micro level about like gym memberships and things. Like people will spend £600 on servicing or MOT in their car because they see it as a necessary thing. Where actually, if you took £600 a year every 3 years, you could spend a decent amount on yourself and go on a wicked adventure. And it doesn't have to be with an organization like us. It's just you can do it on your own. You just have to prioritize spending money on yourself. I'm not very good at spending money on myself for things anyway. I'll spend them
Yeah,
quite happily on.
you are a dad though, aren't you? So like there's a difference between people that have got kids and people that haven't. Like I haven't got any kids, so my disposable
I haven't
income's
got any
all
money.
over the fucking shop. So
Yeah, well, I haven't got any money because I've got kids. Like anyone who's got kids will completely understand that it's no longer my money.
I have a
So,
very, very, very expensive dog, but apart from that, everything like this, it is different. But the point is, you know, it's you're not gonna change to like hitting these big goals. You're gonna change to the process of getting to them. And I think that that and it's not even change. It's just fucking experience, and it's just opening your fucking mind a little bit. And I honestly think that doing this stuff will make you a better parent. It'll make you a better employee. I think big companies should look at sending people out to do this stuff as opposed to going corporate away days, because actually that's where you're built. It is at the edge of your comfort zone, is somewhere you've never been before. Where some fucking corporate away day in Henley, you're not gonna fucking experience anything new, are you? You're just gonna hang around with
feels
Boris and get
selfish though, doesn't
pissed.
it? It feels selfish sometimes to spend that kind of like, and I think that has been not a massive barrier, but it is sometimes a barrier for women in this sport, is that
That's what I
sometimes
was going to
people feel that
ask you. What's the difference in your sign-ups between male and female?
oh, we sometimes smash it. We had a 50-50 on a desert a couple of years
Oh,
ago.
really?
So I think industry average, I think you might correct me. I think the last time I checked looking at Sophie Power stats was around about 70 to 30, I think is the industry average. We're closer to 60-40 and sometimes even better than that. So yeah, desert race a few years ago, we had a 50-50 male female split. We tend to get quite a good above average female participation because we've worked really hard on celebrating our female winners, athletes, putting them into the media, all that kind of stuff. And we've had some great female ambassadors naturally, to be fair. In the early days, we had the legends like Mimi Anderson, been great for female running. Christina Madsen's played her part, beating the guys and taking course records and stuff. And I think it was a lesson really that I pulled from Sonny Pert at Black Trail Runners. He always says the line, you can't be what you can't see. So that's why we try and do our best to highlight everyone the best we can, without it seeming a bit too forced, I guess. We try and do it in a natural way. So, yeah, but that's a, going back to the point, that's a, that tends to be a barrier for quite a lot of women, is they sometimes feel selfish in taking longer gaps of time off because they, whether it's true or not, it probably is, they seem to feel like they're in more important in the day-to-day running of the house and world in their world. So
The thing about that
a
is,
mum.
no, we are told from the minute that we come out the fucking womb not to do it. So if you're a little boy, you're encouraged to do things that are slightly dangerous, a bit crazy, a bit way. This is why women, a lot of my athletes find it hard to run down hills because we're told not to run down hills. Don't do that, it's dangerous. Be careful. Like we are still, even when I watch people now with their kids, it's like they are still, be careful. Oh, hang on a minute. Whereas with boys, they're allowed to go out and do other
Just let them.
stuff. And now, and
I
it's
think it.
societal, and it's like with women, I always say to my female athletes, do you want to be an example to your children, male or female children? If you do, go and do something fucking incredible. Go and take that time. And it's not selfish to take time for you to recharge your fucking
Exactly.
battery, to be the best mother, the best entrepreneur, the best like partner, the best whatever you can be. Because if you're not doing it in the desert, you're doing it sat scrolling on your fucking phone in the bath with the door locked. Like you have to
Absolutely.
have that time. I think it's really fucking
Absolutely.
important, but it is
But I think
societal.
it is societal, and I think that's the, I absolutely agree with you, by the way. Like that's something I would tell any anyone, and my daughter as well. Like I want my daughter to be a badass, and you know, poor her. What world is she going to fall into? But the, I think we have a feature where we have people can call me if they're thinking about joining the race, and the questions from men and the question from women are very, very different. And so that's why we can overcome those obstacles by just listening and learning. And that seems to be men, on the whole, probably through, you know, being a bit more testosterone ridden, are, I don't, you know, I'll sign up without really thinking about it, and then I'll think about the how I get there after. Where on the whole, not every time, but women are a lot more thoughtful before they hit the enter button, and they're like, right, I need to be away for this period of time. I need to sort this level of cover. I need to do this. At the best, the man might say, I might ask my missus for forgiveness rather than a pass. You know, it's a different level of thinking, and it's a summary position that's not the same everywhere. So yeah, we've done a lot to try and get to that position where anyone, just, you know, despite gender, creed, or social standing, can come onto our races and do the best. And we're getting, it's been a tough time. Like we're an adventure company just riding out of COVID, and we're going to plan to do more. The spine's got some really exciting stuff coming out in that regard. But it's, yeah, it's a good time. If you're a woman listening to this, get in and get involved with it, because you'll be paving the way for others, if not you,
Do you know
doing
what's
your
really
bit.
in it's really interesting you saying that men and women's questions. We're coaching with men, they come in and they're just like, yeah, I want to do this, I want to smash this, 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 and this. With women, they come to me and they're like, I don't think I'm really good enough for a coach. I'm not really a runner. I don't really know. I don't really.
I want
And
to
it's
do my
like,
best.
yeah. And it's so fucking interesting. And it is, you know, anybody out there, you know, I bang on about this Invisible Women book, but like it really helps you to understand the difference between the societal story that's been woven into our fucking brains. And it drives me mad. But yeah, I think that the empowerment that anyone, male or female, can get from doing these races is something you cannot get from therapy or from anything else, because it is such an adventure and it's so beyond your comfort zone. It's like honestly that all that stuff I did with that event company totally shaped me, completely shaped me into like, it didn't cure me, but it did make me think, fucking hell, Ali, like, you know, there's more to life than this. The spine, let's talk about the spine. Oh my God, I'm just going to mention this now, but the female lineup for the winter spine is just beyond a dream. It's like the
It's a
world's
female race this year.
greatest girl band is coming together. It's going to be so fucking good. So, how did you get involved with the spine first and foremost? What came
Chance
first,
again.
your involvement or that Land Rover, that branded Land Rover?
Oh, I nicked the Land Rover as part of the
Perfect. I love that Land Rover. I love the fact that you probably drive around sandbanks in that fucking Land Rover and people are like, what's that?
it's more get that hideous monstrosity off of my driveway. So spine again was an opportunity. We shared a lot of this space is a bit weird. You know, if you're organizing races, they're not really collaborative with each other, even though we do the same thing. People don't tend to collaborate, but ego driven around RDs and stuff. But us in the spine tended to get on pretty well. Shared the same medics. Will, who you know from all of the spine videos, was a let's call him, he's much more than that, but at the time he was a mutual asset. He did the same for both of us. Scott and I, who used to be with Phil, had intermittent chats, and Phil knew Archie, and we were linked in anyway. I loved that race. I lived in the area. And then we kind of knew that there was an opportunity that came up. And it was not the perfect time for us, to be honest. We were getting battered by COVID. And Simon and Archie, my business partners at Beyond the Ultimate, just gave me the bravery, I suppose, to go for it. Like, they loved the race too and was like, now or never, let's do it. So we kind of sat there, and while one boat was drowning, while Beyond the Ultimate was sinking, we were trying to figure out how we lifted this one up rather than trying to
Quickly,
save this
this
one.
one's in
Yeah, so
the
like, we might not get abroad for a while. Do we set up a UK race, or do we do this? And we were kind of like, it wasn't a very normal way into buying a business, but I think actually it just seemed Spine wanted to go abroad. We had assets abroad. We wanted to come to the UK, and we didn't own anything in the UK, and Spine did. So actually, the merger just made sense on a kind of day-to-day operational level. And they're both really tight companies in the fact that we've not got a lot. We've got four full-time members of staff that run the whole gig, like, and
Oh my
it's
God.
not,
Are you
yeah, it's
serious?
not. Yeah, we've got like a fleet of contractors and volunteers, but there's four of us. When we get on a team meeting, there is three of us at best most of the time. Lisa's just made it four. And then the directors, like Simon and Archie, come in with their specialist stuff. Like, Archie has a pretty much a day-to-day involvement as well. So it's not a massive corporate kind of entity team, and we all work remotely largely as well. So it came up by chance, and we just went for it. And we all had different things that we wanted to do with it, but the two main things were, we wanted the summer race to have its own identity and be just as big, probably not as big as the winter, but be bigger and have its own identity, which I think we achieved. We wanted it to be known to people outside of the ultra running world, which I think we're achieving, and we're just
Yeah,
about to take the
a
next step to do that.
100%.
Yeah, which we're achieving. It was already getting there, but I think with the new team, like, and Phil's passion driving it, we got there. And then the third thing was, we wanted to make it more accessible in some ways, and Phil's just, he you cut him open and he bleeds the Pennine way. Like, he loves that race, and he's in it day to day to day. And obviously, like, founders over time sometimes lose passion. His is driving up. So all of these changes that have been made recently have been Phil at the helm, kind of going, I want to do this, and we've just kind of gone, well, let's help you. How do we offer that? And I think that's what it needed, was just a little bit of that fresh team around just to push it up. And how do you do all that and keep its kind of small heritage race feel without it getting too wonky and corporate
It's
and all that
got
kind of stuff? So
still got a massive feeling of respect around it, like every January, at the end of January, my inbox fills up with men going, "All right, I want to train to on the spine. Just seen what Jack's done. I think I can do that." I'm like, "Do you? How nice."
No.
About that. But generally, there is still a massive feeling of respect around it, and I feel like the people that enter it do it with the utmost. I keep saying the word respect, but that's what you have to have for the Pennine Way in winter and summer, to be fair. And also, it's still managing to maintain this almost like boutique spec. There's a special feel around it. It's not gone MDS. Do you know what I mean? It's not gone like, it's not gone
That's
weirdly corporate.
100% Phil. That's 100% Phil. Phil is so protective over it, like, so protective. Any change, Phil has got his eyes and hands all over it. And he just, because he's been there from day one, he's got this core, hot-blooded passion to keep it that way. But obviously got the ambition to take it to the heights that it's at now. So it needed Phil, and it needed, I think, people like myself and Archie and Simon, who respected it enough to not change it too much. I think it could have been quite a different
Because Beyond the
thing.
Ultimates, I feel like your role in it is quite quiet. It's and it's like people know, but it's still quite quiet. And
What
again,
it,
quite kind of
yeah. Well,
respectful.
that,
It's not like
yeah.
rebranded. It's not like let's fucking go nuts and do loads of advertising. It's
No.
not like that.
No, and Simon and Archie do a hell of a lot for it, kind of are happy with that. Like, they're just happy to have their part to play. They've been majorly impactful in the growth of that brand, and just, it's not, they're not in it for that. They're not in it for the fame. So, Simon gets his happy buzz when he sees, like, all his new branding and logo and website kind of on things that it shouldn't be on, and Archie gets his little joy when the booking system goes live and works, and all that kind of fastest finger process works. And so everyone's had a really good involvement in it. But It's just such an interesting, and I think I don't know if it was a mistake or not, but for the first year or two, we did nothing. I actually went as a broom wagon driver on the first event when I owned it,
What, in
and
that
no one
vehicle?
knew who
I'm
I
obsessed
was.
with that vehicle.
Yeah, no one, no, not in the Defender. It was I rented a little like it was the most mummy wagon ever. Like I shouldn't probably say that. It was the most school runny wagon ever. So
You
correct
cut that out,
myself there.
Julius. Cut the mummy wagon. Get out.
Yeah,
We don't want
that.
the real
I do it now
personality
because
coming through.
I'm a dad of a daughter, and I even pull myself up on it now because it's like, no, she's gonna fucking drive what she wants.
She's going to be
So
driving that fucking Defender. You know that, right?
she will, because I'm not getting rid of it anytime soon. So yeah, I was in that, and I kind of just hid in this. I think a few people clocked who I was, but most of the time I didn't. So I was kind of like in with the volunteers, listening to the grumbles and the moans,
It's
and
like
kind of like.
undercover boss. I love
Yeah,
it.
like our toaster hasn't worked for the last 4 years. I don't think I fucking sort this out. Lo and behold, a little toaster turns up 4 days later, like a little magic fairy. But it was such useful intel for me to learn the ins and outs of the stuff. And then, yeah, we kind of just thought we're not going to get involved and say we're the new team. This is all the changes we're going to make. We're just going to sit and learn because it's just owned by the people, really. Like I see us as guardians of it. It's owned by the collective army that runs that thing, you know, from Alston lasagna to all the other weird shit that happens on that race.
Hornysted Farm. Fucking
All that
Hornysted
kind of stuff.
Farm.
Yeah, the Angel of Slaggyford and all that jazz.
Yeah, but I tell you what, I went and did safety team last year, right? And I was a little bit scared that I would
So, yeah.
it would be cliquey, and I'd be like, and people would be like, oh, well, I've been doing this 17 years. But it was the one of the greatest race experiences of my life, and I wasn't even fucking racing, because everybody was so fucking nice and supportive and kind and curious, and like there was no hierarchy stuff. I'm sure there's loads of stuff that goes on that I don't fucking see, but it was just a joy.
Yeah,
I
I don't think it's.
loved it.
I think it's just been a thing that Phil's had to sort, and it's been hard at times because it's grown and people have opinions and people change and team changes and there's a way of doing things and things. It's been really. I don't envy his job because he's trying to keep a. It's like having a big Christmas dinner with your large 300 strong dysfunctional family with no sleep. So God knows how he keeps it, but I think it's just his genuine enthusiasm for that event that just makes that thing run. I think it just runs on his, like, it's almost like a Christmas spirit that he brings to it that just keeps everyone kind of that. And then everyone just loves the event. You're not there unless you want to learn something about it or you just love the event itself, right? So
Yeah, it's a
it's a
weird one
beast.
because it's so fucking hard, but it's so flipping amazing. Like it's like the most gaslighty event in the world, because when you're on it, and I've only done the little one, you're like, oh, I fucking hate this, I'm never doing it again. And then within hours of finishing, you're like, oh, I've accidentally signed up for the next one, and then the next one, and then the next one. I think it is very, and even I think that started with safety team, because it's like, right, I'm in it now, and I want to go all the way through to the end of it.
I let out a little giggle because I can remember seeing your social media post. Like, this is shit. I'm never doing this again. And then it was probably about 3 days later because obviously I get view of the back end system as well. And I saw Ali Bailey pop up and was like, well, it's quite the turnaround.
And so, do you know what? About a week later, someone said to me, so what's your favourite 100-mile race then? And I was like, it's not, well, it's 108, but it's probably the Spine Challenge itself. And I was like,
Yeah, there you go.
well, how did that come out? Because the
You're
thing is, it was like, I'm a bit of a princess. Since I've been sober, I've become a bit of a princess where I have all these feelings and I want to look after myself, be nice to myself. But because you're out there by yourself, you really have to fucking, you're on your own. And I was on my own for so long that I actually realised that is the reason that I do this stuff. Because I want to be by myself, and I want to be able to look after myself, and I want to be, oh God, it sounds so blank, but really in touch with yourself and feel every fucking feeling, be that awful and amazing. And I'm like, more of that, more. It's like a drug. It's like, I just want to be laying on a fucking concrete floor in a bivy bag for 10 minutes. It's living, isn't it? It's actual real life. And there's no distraction because your phone doesn't fucking work and you've got no reception and there's no one there to talk to, and you're going to have, you've still got 12 miles. So I think it's just such a joy of a race. But yeah, back to the women's race this year. It is incredible. And I'm really super excited about watching that roll out because it's going to be amazing.
There could be a few more surprises yet.
Ooh.
Oh, I'm not. Oh, not my
Well,
place to say
in
that.
November, I'm going on a lads weekend with Robin Cassidy, Lucy Gossage, Hannah Rickman, Sarah Perry, Laura Swanton-Rivelin, Mel Sykes,
Big
me,
names.
Kirsty Reid. And we are going on a recce, a 3-day recce. I'm not going to tell you where we're starting, where we're finishing, because we don't want people to turn up, but it's going to be the greatest lads weekend of all time. And one of the really interesting things is all those women are the women at the front, and they're training together. And I think that is so interesting. The fact that we're all going to do this together. I'm not doing the spine, by the way, everybody. I mark
So
safety
lovely, though, isn't it?
by being on the safety team. Yeah. But it's like,
So
I'm
nice.
so fascinated by how this is going to roll out this weekend, because it's a social, but is it?
There's going to be some testing going on. There's going to be the
You
odd
imagine? Can you
hill rep in
imagine
there.
if Damien, Jack, John, I don't know, Galen turns up, all went out for a 3-day recce? They'd fucking destroy themselves and each other, wouldn't they?
While pretending to be nice to each other, yeah.
Exactly. Whilst trying to drop 7-minute miles out of fucking Dufton. So
Yeah,
I'm
there,
really interested to see what happens with this. But it's going to be an amazing race, and I'm excited to watch it. You haven't done the spine, have you?
yeah.
Would you? Would you do it?
No.
There we go. That's the end of that question.
I would have if I wasn't now where I am. If I wasn't on this side of the desk, I would have. It definitely would have been on my radar to do.
Really? That's interesting.
I've ran the Pennine Way, but I've not. I'll not do it as a race while I'm.
So, race wise, is there anything you would really want to do race wise? Or you're like, yeah, do you know what? I want to do my own
The
adventures.
yeah, I'll do my own. I mean, I've done my own. So like I've done a joggle with the Three Peaks back in 2000 and whatever with my mate Kimball. We just did that. And I've circumnavigated Britain on a. I either ran 100 mile or did a 100 mile bike. So I've done the around and I've done the through. So I feel like the Southwest Coast Path was the last remaining real estate for that. So that's why that works for me. It tickles that part of my brain and it's something new.
When are
But I
you
think actually,
do? Do you know when you're going to have a go at that then?
I'm going to softly aim for August, but I have to prioritize being a dad first. So I have to let that rule my life. And I'm under no illusion that it's probably going to get broken again by the time I do it. So
What is it at the moment?
I'll have a crack at it. 10 days and 8 hours something, I think.
Ugh.
Christian Morgan had it, and then he got broke again by a few hours. It's a good record. It's
It
and
is, isn't it?
I think if someone like your likes of your Jack Scott or your Damien Halls went and did it, they'd take some chunky change off it because they're the runners they are now. So I don't think it's a very good record. But I think if those kind of guys with that and, or a John Kelly made like that's the thing I'm going to do next and focus on it. I think they've got the ability to probably take a couple of days off, maybe three.
Three
So I'm
days
just pray.
off.
I reckon they
Ooh.
could if they had the run of their lives, but I'm just praying that they don't do it. So if they're listening, any of those three, can you just not
I know at least
do
one of
this?
them will be listening, so I've had two
Yeah,
of them.
well, Damien, sod off. Jack, don't bother. John, if John, just don't either. Just
John's
don't.
busy. Your
I don't
John's
know what
busy
would
at
be.
home saving America with his
I don't know
chainsaw.
what would be worse: dedicating 2 years of my life to train for a record that then one of them takes, like in the months in the build up to it, or doing like what John did to Damo and like waiting for the day after. I think like
Yeah.
at least I get the record and I have it, and then I can live in a
Is
little bit of an
that
egotistical world.
important to you? Is the outcome important to you, or is it the process of doing it? Like, what is more important?
The excitement of training for it and doing the recces, and that is the most exciting. But I'm actually doing the FKT element of it because I feel like at one point I had the ability to get it. I've taken some years out, so I don't think it's going to take too long to be in the ability range to have a good go at it. And I feel like I've got the experience for the longer records to be able to do that on what I've done. So I don't, even though I joke about lack of ability, I think I'm not far off it now. But the FKT is something that isn't normally something that motivates me, but I feel like I need it in order to train to be quicker. And I'm at that point of my age and running career where I feel like if I'm not quick and winning races in the next 5 to 10 years, I won't. So this is my time to maybe podium and win something. And I've done a fair amount of long unofficial stuff, but if you look at my official record, it's pretty weak. So I'm going to spend a few years on at least doing that before I get to 50 and think, I didn't win anything. Am I a bit of a, mug? But it's not my natural motivation.
There's nothing wrong with not winning anything, but also enter the
No,
races
but
you
I
can
think,
win. That's what I do. I'm like, how many women have won this race? None. I'll enter that one. I've come first and last in the same race because I've been the only woman. It's brilliant.
I think my motivation is changing. I also just want to be the fastest dad in the playground. So there's an element of just being a fit dad that my daughter's proud of, and my 4-year-old is a savage. Like I did a park run, and because I was like 100 and whatever, because I just finished in like a respectable time. She's like, "You got beat by everyone, Daddy." I was like, "Oh, right, cool." So that's the viewpoint you're going to have now until you're at least 16. So I need to take that, absorb it, rebuild my soul that you've just crushed, and use that as energy to get a record. So
See, I'm all about the world first because they can't be taken away. So I'm like, yeah, world
yeah.
first, that. That's a
I
world
don't want to
first.
do
So
Pink Helmet Awards, so that now
that's
aren't there?
not
Like, I
pink
want to do the
helmet. That's world first. The first person in the world to
to
have done that.
row the Atlantic in a pink helmet. Yeah. Gotta be
Anywho,
careful. Yeah.
thanks very much for doing this. This has been
It's
great. I've
okay.
very much enjoyed it. If you would like to enter any of Chris's races, his website is.
Beyondtheultimate.co.uk.
There you go. And I guess I'll be seeing you in the winter spine then. Can I go
Yeah,
and do that?
we could see each other before if you want to do some
Well,
South Coast
as
Path
you
stuff.
well know, I am from Bournemouth. I grew up in
Yeah,
Bournemouth, right? I've
nice.
got, and you read my book in the bath, as you
Yeah,
told me
I
that you read
did.
my book in the bath. So you know that
That
there's
was
some
weird,
trauma.
wasn't
There's some, yeah, there's some trauma involved in going to Bournemouth,
Yeah. Yeah,
mainly
okay.
my upbringing. But yes, of course, I'll nip down there and we'll do some South West Coast bath
Well,
together.
we'll go away from Bournemouth. Coast Path's
Let's go to
massive.
Cornwall.
We can do that.
I'll tell you what we could do. We could go and do it like we could go and laugh at the Arc of Attrition people having a horrible time. Go and do it then.
There we go. Yeah,
Yeah.
that'd be good.
Anyway, I love you. Thank you for doing this. You've been brilliant. Go and have a look at
Thanks
Chris's
for having me.
website. He's a legend. Thank you so much
Pleasure.
for listening to the Baillie and Harding
Be back.
Ultrasound System. We love you, listeners, and we love your feedback. So if you've got a little bit of time to rate and review us where you get your pods, that would be amazing. If you could share us with your fellow runners, running clubs, anybody you think might be interested, that would be great too. And if you've got any correspondence, please do send it to us at the usual places. You can email us, ultrasoundsystempod@gmail.com. You can drop us a DM on Instagram. We love DMs and voice notes. It's ultrasoundsystempod. Or you can send a carrier pigeon or letter to PO Box. We don't have a PO Box, but remember when PO Boxes were a thing. We love you. Thanks for listening. We'll see you soon. Bye bye.